Oh, hi, I'm Max Kaiser. This is the Kaiser Report. Let's find out what's happening in the world with Stacy.
Max, you know, on the last episode, you mentioned that bankers didn't go to jail, okay? And I want to pick up on that theme because it is quite an important story to think about while, you know, we've been covering this sort of demise of the U.S. empire. And, you know, of course, it's nothing out of the ordinary. Every single empire eventually collapses, partly for the same reasons. But one thing that always enters the space is corruption, and the pie begins to shrink, and the viciousness for the various powerful families and names and people, you know, in the system start to fight viciously for control of that shrinking pie. And I think we see that with what happened to Paul Manafort when he was found guilty on two federal charges and two federal cases. And then the state, a blue state of the very democratic state of New York, decided that they're also going to try him for mortgage fraud. And they've gone after him hard, and they're vowing that we're going to be vicious and violent and aggressive and vindictive with you. So it really made me think of these sort of corrupt systems that we're going to see, because obviously then a red state is going to start to fight back and maliciously and capriciously target somebody well known in the Democratic Party. And of course, New York in particular, the audacity of this, I want to point out that, as you and I have covered, the mortgage fraud crisis of 2007 through 2009, the collapse of the global economy, of course, happened because of widespread mortgage fraud in the United States, not only on the origination of these mortgages that the likes of Wells Fargo and Wachovia were pushing, but the packaging of those bad debts up by the likes of Goldman Sachs, for example, and then sold to pension funds. And even though they knew them to be sacks of bleep, a reminder that New York, Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general at the time, he led to this headline: New York to get $670 million from mortgage settlement. This was from April 2016 on USA Today. A $5 billion settlement Monday by the Justice Department with Goldman Sachs over the mortgage crisis in 2008 includes $670 million for New York. Attorney General Eric Schneiderman said the piece for New York includes $480 million for consumer relief and $190 million in cash.
Justice delayed is justice denied. Right, so they just play out the game, play out the clock, and by the time they award the fine, it's already been paid for three or four times in the washing machine that is Wall Street or Goldman Sachs. So, yeah, it's corrupt. I mean, corruption is, you see this end of empire, because actually, the thing about money is that it makes you more insecure, not more secure. And so as you become more insecure with greater wealth, you become more paranoid. And you begin to act out, and you begin to try to destroy your enemies. And so it leads to this insular type of thinking. And it leads toward an empire like the U.S. now trying to drop the drawbridge. Particularly, and we've made this point before, after 9/11, the wealthy in America decided, we're not playing anymore. We're going to just grab as much as we can of the cash out there in the system and put it, you know, offshore. That's why there's now $22 trillion offshore. And so the amount of credit in the system shrunk. The central bank, instead of punishing the banks, just flooded the system with more of the fiat money. And then those who are the paranoid have-yachts versus the have-nots decided, you know, we're going to put that more offshore. So they just keep printing and shipping it offshore, and it's completely bypassing the economy. And so the economy is getting more starved for credit, and the people are getting more restless.
And you can do your own research, by the way. Just go to Google and look for the data for the past 20 years or 30 years. And you'll see quite clearly from 2000, 2001, which not only did 9/11 happen, but also Bill Clinton paved the way for the wealth and income gap to happen, for that looting to happen with the Commodities Futures Modernization Act and the destruction of Glass-Steagall. So all those things were in place, and you could see it. You could see the plunder happen live in the charts. But I want to move on to this other story about the college bribery scandal. You know, it's a small-time thing. It's $25 million, or at least the bits they've identified. But there's one person in particular that I want to highlight that was arrested for bribing the way in for his children to one of these universities. But it brings up Bono and this notion of the virtue signaling celebrities and their sort of capitalism, their sort of impact investing that is actually covering up the basically this plunder system. So I wrote, our entire system is one elaborate ruse to keep the peasants from realizing that they live in a neo-feudal society. And this was in response to a tweet stream. I'll read the first one. The juiciest, most revealing fact in the college bribery story isn't the Hollywood celebrities. It's a guy named Bill, whose alleged involvement tells us everything we need to know about our age. What is alleged in the scheme is that someone who claimed to be working to change the system, change capitalism, empowers others, helps others rise, was working downstream to lock others out of a slot they perhaps deserved, but that would instead go to their kid. And now the absolute deans of the doing well by doing good industrial complex, a man who embodied the faith that the meek of the earth could be saved by private equity barons, has been indicted for rigging the opportunity against a disadvantage. So this is a guy from a private equity firm called TPG, and he and Bono have a segment at this private equity firm called Impact Investing, that these wealthy oligarchs, these billionaires, these guys who have received all the free money, the Cantillon effect from the Fed, all these people who are the losers, and all these people who are the winners, you know, the friends of Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, that they, with their impact investing, they can help the poor around the world through their investing. They'll invest in these people, get a return, but they exclusively will be able to deal with the situation. So here's a guy who was prancing around the world with Bono saying, you know, we're billionaires and we're going to help everybody by, you know, through our investment philosophy. But behind the scenes, he was actually basically undermining the whole system, removing the ladder for your children to get a leg up by bribing his own children way ahead of your own children.
Right. Well, you mentioned Bono, and, you know, of course, you see Bono showing up places like Davos. You know, Davos is a annual gathering where people reinforce their virtue signaling while they pillage the global economy. This recent Davos, there was a guest who showed up who started to point out that Davos was a fraud and that they never talk about raising taxes or anything that could actually meaningfully help the people that they say that they're helping. And that guy was, you know, throwing, a cat amongst the pigeons. You know, it was like, oh, what is this wake-up call? And then he ended up on Tucker Carlson show, and then brought even more truth to that show, and then that segment was never aired. That's the problem, again, with being wealthy, is that it breeds insecurity. So you have to go to these Davos events or these other confabs or get your kids into school or Ivy League schools, because if you don't, you begin to kind of dwell on the fact that if the very superficial fiat money that defines you as your person is taken away, you have nothing left. You're an empty shell. You're just a mechanism to channel this fiat nonsensical paper money through to keep those that are in the business of this Cantillon effect of getting the early benefits to themselves in business.
So we have a shrinking pie, and there's a very huge political civil wars going on, red team, blue team. You know, the red team is the Republicans, and they're nasty, and they don't mind being nasty. They're upfront with it. Then you've got the social justice warrior side, the blue team, the Democrats, the Hollywood, the Wall Street, and they all do good. They give to charity. All of the celebrities that got caught out in this scandal, Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin, they gave hugely to charity, to charities that help disadvantaged children, and yet they themselves were actually behind the scenes pulling the stepladder away from anybody to be able to even get onto the ladder. In this case, this guy is pointing out that Bill McGlashan, who epitomizes the modern fantasy that the rich people who rig the modern world, who monopolize the American dream for themselves, are the solution to redressing our injustices. And obviously, Bono is a very huge friend of many of these celebrities, of all the billionaires and all the presidents of the United States. And he gets to hang out with these people, and he gets to basically allocate your taxpayer funds towards things that will make him feel better about avoiding all of his taxes. For example, in Ireland, he doesn't pay any taxes, but he gets basically the U.S. State Department allows him to be so wealthy through the U.S. State Department strong-arming everybody in the world through trade deals and basically patent and copyright enforcements that he gets huge monopoly rights, essentially, that in the whole creative space.
He's a monopolist. He's a predatory monopolist, yes, as is Bill Gates. That's why Bill Gates and Bono hang out, because they're both predatory monopolists. You know, it's a variation on the old theme of whitewashing. You know, people understand what the phrase whitewashing means, but then we had greenwashing, where you pretend to be an environmentalist while destroying the environment, like an Exxon or a Mobil. Then you had bluewashing, where you pretend to be doing something good with the UN while you're doing something bad, like abusing kids overseas. Then you had greenmailing became a variation on blackmailing. You know, corporators of the 1980s, they have rebranded themselves as activist investors. Right? So essentially, you know, it just comes back to this idea of whitewashing. You know, you're committing morally questionable acts, whether you're Bono or whomever, but you can whitewash this in one way or another through various schemes and mechanisms.
You know, it all starts off with well-meaning people. Like, probably Bono feels like he's a really good guy and he cares about people and he probably gives a lot of money to charity. But the fact is, like, this system, as this guy's final tweet in his stream points out, is what is alleged in this scheme is that someone, this private equity guy working with Bono, who claimed to be working to change the system, change capitalism, empower others, help others rise, was actually working downstream to lock others out of a slot that they perhaps deserve, but that would instead go to their kid. You know, this is actually the whole system. There are all these side doors that are probably, the louder somebody is shouting about, you know, wanting to help others and do good for others. You know, you could think of big global churches, or, you know, the more they're shouting about how good they are and how much they care about poor people and are helping people, often it's just covering their own guilt about opening these side doors just for...
No, they're insecure. It's insecurity.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why you see all these elaborate schemes, for example, in serial killers. You know, they try to whitewash or to trade a context for their murders, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, these guys are morally corrupt and they're bankrupting people and they're cutting off access for success for many people.
But even to the level of an actual no-goodnik like Paul Manafort, the fact is the New York Justice Department basically enabled a much huger fraud, trillions of dollars in the mortgage market back in 2007. They continue to cover it up. And now they get to throw you one guy who they say they're going to destroy and see they're tough on this crime.
Yeah, sounds like a brazen con. Anyway, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, much more coming your way.
You are fighting a war against racism.
We have been around gunshots, people getting murdered, drugs all our life.
They come from very rough communities. Young people are deciding if they want to be not like their parents, not like their neighbors.
What do we want?
Justice!
What do we want it?
Yeah.
The blacks always struggle school-wise, gang war-wise. We always have problems.
But you're not going to focus on the Glock. It's the most ubiquitous gun out there. Most police departments use it.
Almost every student in the school felt that they could get their hands on a gun within 24 hours.
We were teaching these kids about racism, about police brutality, taking pride in who they are. These kids are a part of history.
America's policy in Iraq has never been a smashing success, but apparently there's still room to make it worse. The Secretary of State's recent visit to the region was full of bold proclamations and quiet reversals. What is Trump's policy in Iraq?
¶¶
Welcome back to the Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. Time now to return to our conversation with Carl Denninger of market-ticker.org. Carl, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Max.
By the way, I should mention that whenever people stop me in the street, they say, when are you having Carl back on? You know, this is Carl Denninger's our favorite guest. Anyway, let's get into it. So the notion of MMT, Modern Monetary Theory, has swept much of the American left recently. First of all, what is it? And then we'll get into what you think of it. But what is it supposed to be?
I guess you could just call it chartalism, which is sort of what it is, which sounds an awful lot like charlatanism. And that's essentially what you got. It's the premise that the amount of currency and debt that you issue is of no consequence to the economy, that the government essentially uses taxes to mop up excess liquidity and not to finance its operations. And the only penalty that you will pay for using too much of this is a higher inflation rate. They leave that last part kind of in the footnotes, but that's where the real problem comes from with it.
The thing that doesn't make much sense to me is that basically you're still relying on a group of people at the center of this kind of command and control MMT style of doing business to somehow manage the economy based on their kind of intellectual ability, but not relying on market signals. So you're not using market signals anymore. You're using a group of people's judgment and their subjective judgment, which is kind of like worse than Keynesianism even. It's like Keynesianism, but much worse, Carl.
Well, Keynesianism at its core was the premise that during boom times you increased taxes and you filled the coffers with money. And then during busts, you used that surplus to try to level out the system. The problem that Keynesianism has is that human nature is that during booms, you won't raise the taxes. You won't put away the money. You'll immediately spend it on various programs because, of course, there's a boom. There's no reason to save anything because everything is going well. It's all swimming. And then when things go bad, there's nothing to do it with. So you add more debt on. So Keynesianism in practice ends up being MMT. But MMT is just a flat-out fraud. And the problem with it is that it puts forward the idea that you can print value. And that, of course, is impossible. You can't push a computer button and emit cars or cause a surgeon to operate on you and take out your diseased gallbladder. There isn't any way to do that. And so the premise that you can somehow push a button and make these things happen, as opposed to actual human labor making them happen, is nuts.
It kind of repudiates the whole idea of modern economics going back to, you know, Adam Smith and the Invisible Hand and the whole Enlightenment, as a matter of fact. So I would posit that you are probably not a big fan of AOC and her ideas. But the question I wanted to ask was, can you blame millennials and the younger generation for wanting to knock down the corrupt pyramid scheme, debt Ponzi, tilting wealth from the young to the old? You know, the millennials, they're getting the short end of the stick. The baby boomers, like myself, took it all. AOC is holding out something that they believe will be the elixir, the cure of all of this. So can you blame them, Carl?
Well, of course I can blame them. If you've got a massive pain in your back and a drug pusher hands you a bunch of pain pills and says, here, this will fix your problem, but you weigh 450 pounds and you're eating five bags of Doritos a day and 2.5 cases of coca going down your pie hole, if you got rid of the extra 250 pounds, your back probably wouldn't hurt so much. So what are we really playing with here? We're playing with people who have this con game that goes on throughout millennia. And it's not just the millennials that do this. It's been done dozens of times over throughout human history. Instead of actually looking at what's happened and say, okay, the fraud and the scams must stop. Somebody hands you a cheap, easy way out, whether it's the drug dealer on the corner or it's AOC, and says, here, just take this, it'll all be fine. And that sounds attractive. It's especially attractive when you have a very physically attractive young woman that's pushing this mantra instead of an evil old hag like Hillary Clinton. And so I'm not surprised that it's taken off, but it's extraordinarily destructive. You know, this MMT thing, several years ago, I was on a segment with Lauren Lister when she used to be on RT, and we did this with one of the proponents of this premise at the time. She wanted me to have a one-on-one debate with him, and I did. I don't remember the gentleman's name, but basically what I did was I took a $20 bill on the air, tore it in half, and said, see, I just doubled your wealth. Now you have two 20s. And the impact was instantaneous. I mean, you know, anybody that saw that would be like, wait a minute. No, you didn't. Right? But see, that's the elixir that AOC and others are trying to offer here.
Yeah, well done on that. I remember the show, and it kind of shut down that debate pretty quickly. But, you know, what's interesting is that AOC, she was debating in Congress recently, took on an executive from Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo, she was asking, trying to make a connection, or making the point that about a pipeline causing some environmental damage, and saying, you know, basically, shouldn't Wells Fargo take some responsibility for this? And the Wells Fargo executive was pointing out that, you know, they're not the managing the pipeline. They're just funding this pipeline. And, you know, they're not the person to talk to. And yet, if she dug a little deeper, you know, and the question became, remember the Exxon Valdez when Blythe Masters invented the credit default swap and exonerated them from that problem using derivatives, Mr. Banker? Isn't Wells Fargo, in effect, and we can make the case, you fund the pipeline, you don't take responsibility for it, but you, and we know this from what's going on in the industry, have insulated yourself from risk. You're making a riskless bet, a riskless underwriting of this pipeline. And so, in other words, she could dig one level deeper into the rabbit hole and start to pick apart the system a little bit. You know, she could actually become dangerous, Carl.
You're assuming that she understands enough to be able to do that. I have a suspicion she doesn't, and is essentially just parroting things. And on top of that, she needs to be very careful where she goes with that sort of a line of questioning and thought. Because let's just say that her or one of her proteges, you know, Elizabeth Warren or somebody like that, wins the presidency in 2020 and starts putting some of these policies in place, and they bankrupt and kill 50 million Americans. Does she hang on the National Mall at noon for promoting the policies that killed 50 million Americans? By that same sort of derivative standard, I think she gets a date with the gallows.
Okay, well, you know, I'm always willing to talk about the gallows. You know, it's always an interesting conversation, but we got to move on. So, what if you were giving them advice exactly? What could we tell them? You know, these millennials. You know, what could we give them to tell them, like, how to fix this? I mean, I got some ideas, but Carl, what would you say?
You have to stop the medical scam for starters. That's the very first thing, because that's 20% of the economy right now. It's $1.05, and it's going to bankrupt the nation within the next 6 years. If we don't stop this, when it becomes exposed, the government's funding model is going to be severely disrupted, and there is a risk it may collapse. Now, either way, you're going to see extraordinary increases in cost of living across the board applied to everybody, and the people that are going to get hurt the worst are the people that have the least. That's just the way it works. So that needs to stop, and it needs to stop now. And then the other thing that we need to do is we need to take a very close look at this so-called click-through consent model that we have with essentially everything today. And that needs to go away. And I've got some thoughts on that and some stuff that I'm working on. It's difficult to craft in such a way that it doesn't become un-American, really. But at the same time, the idea that essentially these extraction-based business models are all that's left, and we need to put a cork in that, because true innovation gets crowded out by bad investment. And if we don't find a way to make innovation worthwhile, real innovation, we're not going to have any. And productivity is what drives the world in the end.
Right. So by click-through, consent. You're talking about it's very easy to click the terms of consent. You agree to the terms, the T&C of this model, and within that myriad legal document, essentially you're giving away a lot of rights, and you're imposing this draconian feudal layer into the economy. We've got about 2 minutes left. The New York is going after lobbyist Paul Manafort for mortgage fraud. You covered the role of banks in industrial scale robo-signing and other mortgage fraud back in 2008, Carl. Tell us about the role of New York in giving cover to the big banks for their trillions of dollars of crimes.
Well, Paul Manafort's going to prison and is going to probably go to prison again under New York's law because he was an associate of Donald Trump's. The number of people who pulled something at least as equally egregious as what he did in the mortgage market and got away with it, not just in 2008 and just prior to that, but all the way to today, is literally without ability to count. So you've got one guy that gets busted, and you know, then the state of New York sees that, well, you know, he didn't really get a long enough sentence the way we kind of see things at the federal level, so let's charge him as a state prosecutor with a state crime. That sort of thing is very Orwellian. It's nasty. And we as a body politic had better put a stop to that, because if not, that could be used against anybody.
So we're entering into a period now where these big platforms, like, as you point out, the click consent model, getting back to this the monopoly discussion we're having, you know, they're abusing their power. This is an abuse of power. And they are becoming political behemoths. And so either you say, let's just enforce the law against these big tech companies. You don't need to break them up. Who's going to enforce that law, Carl? It seems like the entire system's corrupt. How do we go about enforcing it? We've got about 15 seconds.
I don't see anywhere right now, unless the people in this country rise up and demand it and are willing to enforce that, that it's going to happen, because there's just no impetus on either side of the aisle to actually put a stop to it.
So this 2020 election coming up, it looks like the Democrats don't have much traction. Anybody on that side that looks interesting to you, Carl?
No, and that's a shame, because real competition is something that we ought to have in elections.
Yeah, I would think so. Totally agree. Well, thanks so much for being once again on the Kaiser Report, Carl Denninger.
Thank you.
All righty, and that's going to do it for this edition of the Kaiser Report with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert. I want to thank our guest, Carl Denninger of market-ticker.org. If you want to catch us on Twitter, it's Kaiser Report. Until next time, bye y'all.